So what's the point? I mean, I've been doing this for 41 years. And the longer I have been doing this, being a minister of the gospel, and trying to proclaim the gospel to people of our age, I don't mean old people. I mean people of the 21st century, you know, in our age. The more the challenge becomes, how does what happened in the case of Amos over probably 4,000 years ago, and in the case of Jesus, well, of course, 2,000 years ago. And so what's the point? I mean, we come to church and we hear these readings that are ancient. And the question should be, so what do they mean for me or for us? Take the reading, for example, the reading from the book of Amos, one of the prophets. Amos was a prophet probably 2,000 years before Jesus. And what we get in the gospel, I mean in the first reading, is that God sent Amos to what's called the northern kingdom. Right? You have to remember that Israel was divided into the northern and the southern kingdom. So the northern kingdom was called the kingdom of Israel, and the southern kingdom was the kingdom of Judah. And so the Lord sends him to the northern kingdom to prophesy, and he gets rejected. And Amos says, I didn't ask for this job. That's basically what he said. If you notice, it's one of the chief priests tells Amos to get out of there, to go preach somewhere else. And this is the king's temple. You go earn your bread as a prophet somewhere else. And Amos says, in our lingo, he says, look, I didn't want this job. God made me come here. I was a dresser of sycamore trees. I used to tend the trees. And I was a shepherd. And God took me out of here and he sent me to you. Now, the reading ends. So, okay, nice little story. But what does it got to do with us? And then Jesus sends out people, and we hear that they preach the gospel, they heal people, and then they get back and they cast out demons. But the question still remains, what does that have to do daily? I mean, daily with us. And for me, the reason why this remains the most important message that there is to give is when you look at it from the perspective of imagine you're in an airplane and you're looking down and you finally see the pattern that someone has been telling you is there, but you're too close to the ground and you don't see the pattern. And until you're at 40, 30, 40,000 feet, you don't see the pattern. And the pattern is the whole reason for the message. Now let me explain what I mean to you by that. I have spent my entire life trying to figure out what in God's green earth does it mean to be a human being. It's the most interesting question that exists. I heard it the other day, and somebody I heard it was so pithy that I loved it. I read that the two most important days of your life is the day you were born and the day you find out why. Think about it. The day you were born and the day you find out why. And that's the point. That for most of us in society, we go through life not knowing why. There's a passage in one of the plays that I love, which I'm surprised more people don't know about, which is Man of La Mancha, which is the story of Don Quixote, and I still half the people here are going, who? Okay. This is a medieval novel about a crazy old man who thinks he's fighting dragons. But anyway, there's a part right there at the very beginning where the writer of the novel in the novel is actually being accused of being crazy and irrelevant and out of touch with reality. And at one point, Cervantes, who is the guy who's writing the novel, it gets a little complicated because he's writing the novel and he's inserting himself into the novel, writing the novel. And so Cervantes says, "So, you think I'm out of touch with reality? Let me tell you something. I have been at wars. I have seen men die. I have seen the destruction that is called reality. I have held men in my arms as they were dying, their eyes questioning, looking, and their expressions saying, why? And then he says, I don't think they were asking why they were dying. They were asking why they had lived. Why had they lived? When life itself seems crazy, who knows where madness lies? Perhaps to be too practical is madness. And maddest of all is to live life as it is and not as it ought to be. And so the question in that paragraph is, the day you die, are you going to be looking around saying, what was that all about? Why did I live? What's the point? Because let me tell you, it passes quickly. And what the gospel is trying to do is to remedy that very issue. One of the teachings of the Catholic Church that I find most germane, most important for us to understand is the teaching of the Catholic Church on original sin. Now please understand, a lot of times we understand, I remember being a little kid learning in the Baltimore Catechism. I know some of you younger people have no idea what that is. But it was an old catechism that you had to, you memorized a bunch of stuff from it. But I remember learning original sin. Now, original sin is the name given to the sin that occurred at the origin. At the origin. Meaning, in Adam and Eve, please remember, Adam and Eve is not a historical story. It is almost a parable. And it's meant to teach us something. That somehow, at the origin of humankind, and we don't know how, but at the origin of humankind, we became disconnected from God. And the effect of that disconnect from God is the fact that we don't know who we are. We don't know why we are. We don't know where we came from. And we don't know where we're going. That's the whole point. And that's something that all of us experience. We have all kinds of people all the time. All of us. We're looking for who I am. That's a fundamental experience of humanity. Who am I? Where am I going? What's the point? And that's the after effects that you're experiencing. That's the after effects of the disconnect that occurred through Adam and Eve. You know, and I've said this probably several times to you, that one of my favorite moments is in the story when Adam and Eve eat of the fruit. By the way, it doesn't say it's an apple. It just says fruit. When they eat of the fruit and they believe that the serpent said to them that they would be like God, that they would not have to obey God, that they could set their own rules. And the moment they eat of the fruit, the very first thing that happens is they notice they are naked. Now, to me, that is amazing. First of all, think about it. Do you, when you're in the shower, unless you take your shower with your clothes on, but do you need anybody to tell you you're naked? Well, of course not. You know it. So they hadn't noticed that before? And then you get God walking through the garden, and God says, Adam, where are you? And Adam says, we were naked, and so we hid behind the bushes or something. And God, in the most interesting line, one of the most interesting lines of the Bible, says, who told you you were naked? Now think about that. Think about that. What do you mean, who told you you were naked? Didn't you notice it? And you know why? They didn't. Because the concept of nakedness had not been invented. Do you realize that we are the only animals on planet Earth that have the concept of nakedness? You ever gone up to your dog and said, put some clothes on? Right? Imagine your goldfish. You're naked. You know, get a little goldfish suit. There's no other animal in a whole of creation that has that concept. It's only us as human beings. But the issue of nakedness is actually the symptom of a deeper issue. And the symptom of the issue is, we don't know any longer who we are. It's as if Adam and Eve, when they ate of it, they looked down and said, what in God's green earth is this? They no longer knew who God was. They were disconnected from Him. Why were they alive? Why were, who was who? Everything got disconnected. You know what the image I get? You ever seen turned on a hose at full throttle and then let it go? The hose just... That to me is like human beings. Human beings are all over the place. And the reason why is because we don't know who we are. We don't know where we're going. We don't know where we came from. We don't know the meaning of anything. And we walk around inventing, trying to find a meaning to what all this thing is. That's the situation what we are in. You may try not to think about it very often. Most of us take shelter. Most of us take shelter. What I mean by that is, for example, let me use my own family. I still remember when my mom in 1976 had a home in Denver, Colorado. Actually, Littleton, right outside of Denver. My dad was living with her. I was in the seminary up the street in Denver. I went to the seminary part of the time in Denver. My younger sister was living with her. And my brother had a job in town. We were all in our mid-20s. Within 6 months, I was ordained to the priesthood, and I moved to Houston. My brother got a job in New Jersey. My sister got married and my father died. In the space of 6 months, I saw that woman living inside the shelter of the meaning of her family, and all of a sudden it was gone. And the question was, so what's the meaning of my life? And the reason I use her only because most of us are involved in the immediate meanings of our lives, of getting things done, as it should be. But the problem is that once those things pass away, you'll have to do what I saw my mom have to go through. The tremendous emptiness, the tremendous emptiness of what am I doing? Where am I going? What's the point of all this? Why doesn't God just take me? And I've seen that in the years that I've been a priest, time and time and time again, in different circumstances. Sometimes with young people, I see them get out of high school. They have no idea where they're going. I see people who get divorced. I see even people in marriages trying to, or in jobs, trying to do their job and periodically asking, what the heck is this for? That's what's called the human condition. The human condition is that at the root, when you lift up your eyes from whatever's keeping you busy, when you lift up your eyes, you're going to ask the question, what in God's green earth am I doing? Because there seems to be no meaning. And you know, that's what's being taught, by the way. This is just an aside. That's what's being taught. I was talking to a young lady a few days ago who is majoring in anthropology in a secular university. And we were talking about what they teach, and they said, oh no, Father, when they teach you that life has absolutely no meaning. Absolutely no meaning. They teach you that the reason we have right and wrong is because we agree for the sake of the tribe on what's right and what's wrong, but every tribe does it differently. And at the end of our lives, and there is no right and wrong, we don't know where we're going, the universe is going to die an empty death in the cold expansion of space, and we have no idea where we're coming from because there is no God, and the only meaning that there is the meaning that you give to your life, period. And when you get to the point that life is too hard to go on, you just end it. You just end it. That's what's called the human condition, disconnected from God. And so what are these prophets? What is Jesus trying to do? Think about this. If God is love, and he loves us, what is he supposed to do when all of his sons and daughters cut themselves off from their original meaning? Imagine you're babysitting, and you're babysitting a 5, 6, 7-year-old kid, and that kid comes up to you and says, by the way, me and my friends are going to go on Westheimer, and we're going to play kickball on Westheimer, and it's in the middle of one of your favorite programs, and you say, no, you're not. And the kid takes his ball, runs away towards Westheimer. Do you wait until, I'll be right with you, let me finish this program? Okay. Do you do that? Of course not. What do? You run. You run after the kid. And when if you see a neighbor down the road, you say, get him, get him. You try to head him off. Why? Because you love the kid and because you know he's heading towards total self-destruction. That's the situation God finds himself in. He created us in his image and likeness. We got disconnected from him, and now he is looking at a humankind that is headed for total oblivion. Everything you've ever cared about and loved is headed towards destruction. And so what does God start doing? In comes Amos. In comes the different prophets, which is basically God saying, get him, come back to me. You're not going to find happiness except for little pieces. And then ultimately, as it will happen, all of the things that you have relied on for happiness will go away. Your wife, your husband, your kids, your property, your body. Everything will go away until you reconnect. And that's exactly the whole issue in being a Christian. In being a Christian, God is saying, I want to come to your rescue. Because if you keep living the way you're living, you're headed for total destruction. Even if you think you're doing okay, you're not. You're not. And so what does God do? I always tease, but I think this is a little bit beyond teasing when I say that I think God invented that little saying, if you want something done right, you do it yourself. I think at one point in history, God said, he talks Southern. Y'all have screwed this up so badly that the only way to do this is for me to come and show you what I had in mind when I created you. And so I'm going to become human to show you not only who I am, but to show you what a normal human being is supposed to look like. Jesus is God showing us how to be normal. Jesus is the only normal human being. As I always say, the only reason we think we're normal is that we're all screwed up in the same way. You know, we look at each other and we go, hey, yeah, we're normal. No, you're not. No, you're not. None of us are. And so the whole issue is to reconnect with the original purpose, the original identity. That's the whole point of being a Christian. The whole point of being a Christian is not about going to church. Going to church is a nice side benefit and a tool to help reconnect you. But that's why we constantly are emphasizing this whole thing about the distinction between a cultural Catholic and an intentional disciple. A cultural Catholic just goes, yeah, I'm the end, save us, I'm the Holy Spirit, I sing a Jesus song and then go home and do whatever I want. The intentional disciple is a person who says, man, I'm messed up. And my future is messed up. And I want to reconnect to the only reality that is ultimately going to rescue me from emptiness and death. And that is, I want to be a student, a disciple, a follower of Jesus. Every day of my life, I want to say, how should I be? And I look at him. That's the whole point of reconnecting. That is the whole point of being a Christian. And I'll leave you with a reminder. It's a reminder. Most of you know that I love etymologies. I just find so much wisdom in etymology, the whole study of where words come from. It's not entomology. That's insects. The study of insects. Etymology. To me, the word religion is fascinating because it's so simple. See, anytime you put re in front of anything, it means do it again. So repaint, rewrite, reform. Anything you re is do it again. And so Ligion. Ligion is L-I-G, is a form of L-I-N-G. And L-I-G means to connect. That's why, for example, you have ligament. It's a connection. Or the League of Women Voters. It's the connection. In Spanish, if you know a little Spanish, the word liga means rubber band. It's connect. Okay? And so here you have re and league, connect. Reconnect. The whole point of religion is to reconnect. And why would you need to reconnect? Why couldn't you just connect? Well, you could just connect if you had never gotten disconnected. But since we've been disconnected, we have to reconnect. And that's the whole point of religion. And that's the whole point of why we exist. That's the whole point of why this church has services on Sunday morning and during the week. To help us, all of us, to reconnect to the original purpose, the original relationship that made us who we were supposed to be. If we don't do that, look, if you practice religion and you practice it without the intense desire to reconnect to your original purpose in God, you have wasted your time. And believe me, you can practice religion without having any desire to change. I mean, in the first, when Amos, in the reading, you realize it's the chief priest of the temple who's saying, Amos, get out of here. Go prophesy somewhere else. Go prophesy somewhere else. And Amos said, God sent me to you. And the guy says, I don't care what he did. You go somewhere. We want our religion here. We got our religion ready. Who were Jesus' main enemies when he was living? Religious people. Religious people were his main enemies. You know why? Because they like their religion. They just don't want to hear God. They want their religion without God. Let us have our liturgies. Let us have our offerings. And we don't have to hear God. That's a real danger. And I'm glad it's, you know, sometimes people may say, well, you're preaching to the choir. Yeah, because the choir is in danger. We're in danger sometimes of wanting religion without the actual reform, reconnecting with God. So, when you hear these prophets, when you hear these stories, what's happening is that it's the story of God reaching out to reconnect us to Him. And what the church is doing today is following exactly what happened and what has been happening for 4,000 years, probably longer in some way or another. That's what's been happening. And so, I have absolutely no ending. You know how sometimes you're saying, okay, I got to bring this in? I have none. So I'll just shut up.